ladies and gentlemen, two men from opposite ends of the physical, cultural, and emotional spectrums. Flats and Shanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's podcast. I'm David Flatman.
I'm Tom Shanklin.
All right, Tom.
Hi, Dave.
You all right?
Yeah, good, actually. How are you?
I'm all right.
I like what you're wearing today.
Yeah, tell them.
Yeah, it's a cardigan. It looks like it's Blue Harbour. And a lovely shirt.
What's Blue Harbour?
Cardigan.
What's Blue Harbour, though? Is that a style or a brand or something?
You know, he's playing this game, isn't he? You know what it is, mate.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you do.
I do not know what Blue Harbour is.
You didn't know when you bought it from M&S?
It's not from M&S. Oh, the Blue Harbour range in M&S.
Oh, pennies drop. Well done.
For fat guys.
No, it's just...
Oh, I've got Blue Harbour shorts.
Well built.
No, this is not a M&S cardi, actually.
I like it, though. I like cardigans, mate, so...
Oh, right. Mm. Okay, I thought you were taking the mickey.
No, not at all.
Do you want to tell everyone where we are?
Yeah, we're back in the Cardiff Blues, BT, Cardiff Arms Park, in my mate's box. James Ronald Charles William Rainbird. That's actually his name.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Did his parents want to make him posh by giving him loads of initials?
Yeah, exactly what he did.
Embarrassing.
And we're in his box. He's the MD of Pink Pig Loans.
Pink Pig. Are they a sponsor of ours?
Not yet.
Well, let's not plug him then, because he's given us nothing.
But, yeah, they guess what they do?
Do they lend money to farmers?
No.
They do loans.
They lend money to anyone.
They're basically loan sharks, so he knows
violent people. Sharks, not sharks.
He kneecaps people.
Secured loans, mate.
He kneecaps people, okay.
But Pink Pig loans, yeah.
Mm. What have you been up to?
Loads.
Oh, God.
Absolutely loads. We did a filming video... last week, didn't we? With Gav Henson.
Oh, yeah, super Gav.
Hopefully a few of you have seen it. He looked sharp, didn't he? I mean, Flats and I, we try and make an effort when we're on camera to wear something half decent, and Gav just rocks up dressed all in black. Black trainers, black jeans.
Knackered trainers as well.
Black hoodie, black leather jacket, and just looked cool.
Jet black hair. He looked amazing, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he smelled, genuinely smelled amazing as well.
No, he smelled a little bit of biscuits.
Biscuits. Yeah, I got aftershave from that.
Saint-Tropez.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, I think so, mate.
And he went, we did a bit of filming with him, and he was only there for half an hour, wasn't he? But he went straight from there, see your boys, and walked out, and we said our goodbyes. We finished our filming, which took a good half an hour, 45 minutes. We walked out and bumped straight into Gav in the street in Central Bath again, and he'd been for a sunbed, hadn't he?
Yeah, he's feeling a little bit peaky, he said.
No hiding it.
Told you, mate. Look good, play good.
Yeah, he's playing really well.
Yeah, that's his motto. So that was good, wasn't it? We had a bit of filming in your territory in Bath.
Manor, yeah. We're filming today as well.
Strangely, nobody knew you, though. There's no waves, there's no high fives, no horn beeping, apart from Jerry Guscott.
Oh, yeah, we saw Jerry.
Who decided to walk down the middle of the high street in some black tracksuit bottoms, a black fleece, and a towel wrapped around his neck on the inside.
Like a boxer running out.
Yeah. It's been on the cross trainer.
Yeah, but it's Jerry, mate. Do what he wants.
Yes, exactly.
Does what he wants down there, mate. Does exactly. Absolutely what he wants.
I end up speaking on Friday night in Rumney. You wouldn't know Rumney, but Rumney's where Tom James, the Cardiff Blues winger, he's had a dabble now and again with Wales.
Yeah.
That's his home club.
People say he's a bit of a hard nut, Tom James. Is that because he's from an area? Is Rumney a bit of a roughneck area?
That's one of the reasons why. The other is basically I took him under my wing when he first came through.
Put a few hard edges on him, did you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I spoke at Rumney Rugby Club. It wasn't for actual Rumney Rugby Club. It was for the Knights of St David.
Who are a lot of old geezers that sing a lot.
Partly, yeah. They set up a group after the Second World War in 1946, and every year they've had an annual dinner.
So it's a really important dinner for them.
Yeah.
And you were guest speaker. How'd you go down?
Mixed, I think.
That means shocking.
I mean, one of my opening lines was that I was second choice speaker here and Garth Thomas was first choice, but...
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Where was he stuck?
Stuck in Barry.
Yeah, or Sydney, but he wasn't in Australia.
Chester, Warwick.
Chester.
Yeah.
And I said, look, you know, pre-2007, didn't mind it at all. Used to love it. In fact, getting recognised for Alfie. But now it literally is a pain in my arse. Can I say that on here, or...?
You said it. Now you said it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I'm looking at you for clarity.
I know, but I just think... The fact that I've laughed at it means I've endorsed it. Okay. So I guess we're both guilty. So you went down all right.
Yeah, okay. And then weekend, just relax, Evu, mate, watch a couple of films, watch Beast of No Nation. It's really good on Netflix.
Is that the Idris Elba number?
Yeah, where...
Not seen it.
There's sort of civil war going on. I mean, someone probably picked me up on that.
What country?
Ghana. It's good, though. It's good.
I've got some mates doing a bit of business in Ghana at the moment.
It's quite a deep film. And then we'll also watch The Accountant with Ben Affleck.
I like Ben Affleck. He seems to get a lot of grief from the sort of cinematic aficionados, but I always think he's really good.
He's got autism in it. Well, he's autistic.
Oh, is he?
In this film, yeah. Yeah.
It's probably quite hard to play if you're not autistic, isn't it?
Yeah. And he was more of a bit of a vigilante, really.
Okay.
I mean, he's not going to casinos, counting cards, stuff like that.
Oh, right. That's what I'd do. That's what I'd do if I had it.
Yeah.
That's what I'd do.
Rain Man.
Yeah.
So, quiet. What about yourself, boy?
Played a game of rugby on Friday.
No way.
Yeah.
For who? Bath.
For Minchin Hampton RFC.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, Mike Tyndall's local club. He plays for them quite a lot.
And it's good to keep him with the roles.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to play, but just, you know, just so I can have a selfie with Tins and Zara. So
Princess Anne was there as well.
Seem cool. I'm thinking about having another baby just so we can make like Tins and Zara godparents. Then we can have royal godparents. I can't believe I didn't think of that when we had kids. I don't want them to be godparents. They're probably godparents to like 800 children. But we're thinking about doing it just to be those nauseas that do it. Do you know what I mean? They've got no choice. They can't say no.
And presents as well.
Imagine the presents.
Every year.
Jokes.
Yeah.
Here's a horse.
Yeah.
Here's a Land Rover. Here's a digger.
Here's a unicorn.
Yeah. Here's some land. Yeah. You know, yeah, exactly it. Amazing. So, yeah, played this game.
Here's a dodo.
Yeah.
It's the last one.
Here's a duck-billed platypus. Yeah, it's literally the last one. So, in our team, I might have talked about this last week, but
who pulled out? I want to know who pulled out last minute.
Lee Mears. There's always Lee Mears.
There's always someone.
Yeah, pulled straight out.
Yeah.
Tins texted us the team last, WhatsApped us the team. This is the team as it looks. And I jokingly sent back, Mearsy will pull out, just so get yourself another hooker. And he was like, yeah, I know. And it was all in this group WhatsApp. And sure enough, Mearsy pulled out.
What's his excuse?
Decent reason, actually. His wife had booked a surprise birthday weekend away. And Tins didn't know that. Mearsy didn't know that. So she rang Tins and said, look, you need to drop him because...
He's either very unfortunate or just very clever. Think of a new excuse.
Yeah, in fairness, it was real.
Okay.
And he would have absolutely torn up because he's a midget. He is an unbelievable athlete. And he's one of those guys that he could be 45 and still play really good rugby because he's just amazing little...
Always smiling as well,
miniature
mate.
Specimen. Yeah, he is, yeah.
Like, I don't like people like that.
Don't trust him.
No.
Quiffing a smile, not having it.
It's annoying.
They're not having it.
Type of people that just, you know, you share a lift with them and they're like smiling and laughing to themselves.
Isn't life? Yeah, but you know they go back to their room and cry themselves to sleep.
Well, that's what I hope.
Yeah. So in this game, it was all a big laugh and the weather was really bad. So Rob Fiddler was texting saying, can we shut the roof, please?
What, while he's playing?
Yeah. Morning of, and they said, don't realise the weather is really bad. But so the game is still on, but we've called off the warm-up, which I thought was fair enough. Mm. So no warm-up, straight out. Quick swig of water, cause energy drink, because you think better hydrate. You got about 3 swigs before kick-off. Turned out to be local ale in all the water bottles. Half-time, bottle of port. But it was great because it was all a complete laugh and we were laughing hysterically for most of the game.
Mm.
But and all of us, there were like ex-pros on our team. The opposition had Andy Deacon, the old Gloucester prop, and Pete Buxton, but otherwise 13 amateurs. And so it was like a load of pros against a load of amateurs, basically. And ex-pros rather. And it was all like take it easy stuff. But Nicky Robinson, Cardiff boy from down here, played 10 for us.
Good shape still. Just good retired, shape. Isn't he?
Yeah, well, it doesn't look like he's been training too hard the last few months.
No,
the Blues.
The Blues signed him on like a 3-month contract.
Yeah, ended last week. So he's just retired of pro. And he played 10 for us and it was just a big laugh. And he got the ball. And the first time he got the ball, he just shipped it on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these guys like Robbo, he could score every other time he gets the ball in a game like that.
Yeah, he scores when he wants.
Yeah, without being too arrogant.
About you?
The pros, no, didn't say about me.
Okay.
But as soon as he got the ball and passed it, it was like a second and a half late. This bloke, I think it was one of their second rows, absolutely totaled him. Didn't just scrag him, like smashed him, and he's like spinning backwards. Like, yeah. And Robbo got up like, what the fuck? And it's funny because I'm like, my competitive instinct died the last game I played. I've got no interest in who wins.
It died way before that, mate.
It died way before that. I think we won the game. I found out after. I couldn't tell you who scored.
2010, I think.
Oh, wait.
Okay.
So then this bloke wiped out Robbo, and I was just like, I was like, right, someone's getting it, and I was just running around twatting people.
That's basically like touch, isn't it? You know, you play a game of touch, it only takes one person to give an aggressive push or hold someone back, and you flip.
Yeah, and I was done. I was like, I wasn't running around angry, but I was like, every time one of them got the ball, I was like, I'm going to twat someone now.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh.
It was good, actually. It was good fun. I've got a sore ear now. I couldn't sleep on my right ear, which I like. My shoulders, they were quite bad yesterday. I couldn't.
How many did you bury?
I didn't bury anyone, but I made a
aggressively
couple of aggressive tackles. But
did it feel good, mate?
First time I got the ball, no joke. First time I got the ball, a hole just opened up, and I went straight through and a clean break. Everyone was laughing. This bloke came across to tackle me, 55-year-old scrum half. Right, he looked 75.
Okay.
And he was grinning as he ran towards me, thinking he's going to... And I thought, oh, just for a laugh, I'll drop the shoulder and absolutely whack this poor old bloke. Yeah, it was good. It was good. It was really, really good fun. Really, really good
fun. Did you win?
I think we won, yeah. But we had a good night.
What else have you been up to?
I went up to Worcester for the Worcester-Bristol game for the highlights show, and it was... They were brilliant.
We'll talk about that in a bit.
They were really,
so
really...
So you had a fairly quiet weekend? And you're for you?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, good. Did you catch up on a bit of sleep?
No, I don't sleep. I'd like to sleep more than I do, Tom, but I've, you know, as it happens, I've got kids that get up very early. But otherwise, I'm all right, mate. I am all right.
You know, something different's going to happen this week in the podcast.
Are you going to talk? I got a load of grief for talking too much last week.
From who?
Like three people on Twitter said you didn't get a word in. But then I think it's because...
You talk a lot, but...
You weren't feeling very well, and I just had a coffee.
Yeah, we got Leo Vegas.
Yeah.
Sponsoring now. Yeah. Live.
Live?
Yes. Absolutely live.
We've got a sponsor.
Yes.
See, Shanks, I knew this was happening, but Shanks and Michelle, our agent, kind of deal with this stuff. I'm not very good at the formalities. So I knew it was happening. Glad to have them on board. Spoken to a couple of the guys at Leicester Tigers, whom they also sponsor, and they say they're very nice people. Mm. So I think this is good news. It's
so we're
going
to have a new little segment in this podcast. It's going to be Bet of the Week.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to focus on one game.
Yeah.
We're going to put a bet on.
Yeah.
That bet, if we win, then goes to charity, and our chosen charity is Children in Need.
Yep.
So it's a little bit of fun. We're not pro gamblers, so...
Hey, when the fun stops...
Yeah.
Stop. Is that what they say?
That's what they do say.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't take our word for it. They're going to come in, these bets. We're having a bit of fun. We're looking at...
Oh, God. I mean, I'd say there's a... I've never done much betting before. I only really done it at Cheltenham, so this is quite exciting for me. I don't even know really know how to do it.
Yeah. So you go on the website, mate. LeoVegas.com.
Yep.
You know, if you are betting, the T's and C's do apply.
Yep.
Make sure you're over 18.
Yeah, God, yeah.
Obviously, and bet what you can.
Not what you can't.
That's what we've always said that. So
you've always said it.
I mean, we focus on a game. This weekend, we are going to focus on England v Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
I've already decided that.
Okay, well done.
But, yeah, so we're going to be talking about that later as well.
Are we? Yeah. We're going to talk about the big sporting event of the weekend.
Yep.
Which was David Haye against Tony Bellew.
It was.
Fascinating.
Bit of news as well that's come in on the rugby front. Ian Madigan going to Bristol.
Well done him. Or well done them, actually, I'd say, respectfully.
You got some bit of goss on Lee Halfpenny, which is random because it should be me because... You know, he's my mate.
Yeah, he's not your mate. I do know some stuff about the WRU dealings with Lee Halfpenny, and
so
see how it goes.
So listen in.
Yeah.
So first bit of news, Dave. Lee Halfpenny.
Yeah. Well, it's this long conversation that surrounds him, and
hold on, I should talk about him because he's my mate. You've never met him.
I have met
him. You just pretend to know him.
I met him once at a dinner.
Did you? Where?
Rugby writers dinner when he won player
of the year. Why are you looking up when you're saying that? Because you're lying.
I'm trying to recall it.
I know you're lying. You've opened your mouth.
You! Anyway, eyeball body language is left for lie, right to recall. So if I look left, I'm lying. If I look up, I am something.
You've got eyes everywhere, mate.
I met him once, all right?
You've got a bonk eye. Go on.
I met him once.
Yeah.
He seemed to like me. There's long conversations surrounding whether or not he's going to come back to... Cardiff/Wales.
Cardiff, yeah.
Yeah, on a central contract or whatever. But there's been something released, hasn't there? You tell us about that.
Well, there has been something released. I mean, they put together a contract, like a national dual contract, which part paid by the union, part paid by the region. I think it stood at around 400k. In February, that moved...
Can't live on that in Cardiff, mate.
That moved up to 420. So the contract was there. I think the money had been agreed. It was a 2 or 3 year deal, but the deal would stop mid-season, is what the WRU have sent. They're not comfortable with setting a precedent of a contract ending mid-season.
Yeah, so that is... I mean,
it proved an issue.
Yes, they might not be, but... I spoke to somebody, this is why it's odd that I know this and you don't, but I spoke to somebody within one of the Welsh regions, Cardiff Blues. And they call Cardiff Blues now or just Blues? Whatever, Cardiff. And the conversation was with WRU and Cardiff basically coming together, working around it, getting Lee Halfpenny back from Toulon, because he's obviously a huge name here and all that sort of stuff, and it's great for Welsh rugby to see guys choosing to come back. You know, something Welsh rugby, I would argue, really needs desperately. So this is the money you got to pay. I don't know what the money was. Let's say you're right, it's 420 grand a year. Poor bloke. Plus endorsements. But that was agreed, and let's just say it was a 2 year contract. So it was a normal, it was either 2 or 3. What year are we in? Yeah, it was a 2 year contract that he comes back at the end of this season. And then Lee and his agent realised that the contract was going to end right before the World Cup.
Yep, that's correct.
So it's like, so my contract is over as the World Cup arrives. That's a bit odd. I don't want to be negotiating contracts when I'm trying to go into a World Cup and have that. Because for some people, it's no stress at all. For a lot of people, it's very, very stressful having contract negotiations. He may well be in, you know, the latter camp. I was as well. I didn't enjoy it at all. So I wouldn't have wanted that hanging over me. So he basically said, I just want 2 years and 2 months just to cover the World Cup. Because he'll be going anyway, let's face it. I just want to cover the World Cup.
Yeah, if fit, he's on the plane.
Yeah, so the guys at Cardiff Blues basically send a message, whether it's a text or an email or whatever. And I've actually seen this on a phone screen, so this is not my mate said this. I've seen the actual messages to someone at the WRU, saying he just wants an extra 2 months because... it secures it for the World Cup. And you're talking about 420 grand a year. You're talking about, if that's the right number, let's just assume it's a lot. You're talking about 2 extra months. So it's 26 months instead of 24-month contract. The message comes back straight away, fine. So it's done, right? It's done. The next thing the Mr. X at Cardiff Blues hears, it's all fallen through. Hang on a minute, what's gone on? They've told him, no, you're not having it. So they've told Cardiff Blues, fine. Then they've told Lee Halfpenny, I guess Lee Halfpenny's agent, who I happen to know, who hasn't told me any of this, by the way, and that's the truth, who's a lovely man. And Lee's just said, well, do you know what? Fuck it. If they're not going to do that, they're going to say yes, then they're going to say no, they're going to muck me around again, I'm out. And he re-signed for Toulon, and they lost him over 8 weeks on top of a 2 year contract. Absolutely pathetic.
The Blues tried, I think, in fairness, when they saw this deal was slipping away, to say that they would cover the 2 extra months cost, but because of all the messing around, he's just gone, right.
Yeah, and why does he want to go where he's not wanted sufficiently, you know?
I'll re-sign an extra year extension at Toulon. And he would have been one of the only Welsh players to spend a fair chunk of his playing career out there. Normally, players go for 1, 2, possibly 3 years. But I think when you add up, he would have been out there for 4 years.
27 minimum. Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
a shame they can't get him back here, because... Welsh rugby, I still believe, needs all their best players playing in Wales.
Yeah,
I don't agree with people saying, oh, this is going to make them a better player outside. It's ruining the game here. It's ruining the domestic game. And how do you get the domestic game better is by having better quality players.
Mm.
I massively reckon we need a rule like Australia have, you know, that 50-60 cap rule.
Yeah.
So you play all your club rugby here. When you've earned that 50 or 60 caps, it could even be 40 caps for Wales, then you can look outside. If you go before that, you're not picked for your country.
Yeah.
And you watch, you know, what's your dream? Your dream is to play for your country, isn't it?
Mm.
If you make money...
my dream.
If you make some money, great. But if you put that on the line, you know, if you're going to go over to France or you're going to go over to England...
Yeah, they'll be back.
And you won't... If you do that, you're not going to play for Wales. You look at that, and I reckon most will choose Wales.
Mm. Yeah.
That's your shop window.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing I can't recreate anymore. It's going out... in front of 78,000 people. I mean, I might become a rock star, so I'll get that back. But
Jimmy Somerville tribute band.
Yeah, Jimmy Winterville. That's what I call myself.
But it, you can look at it two ways, and I understand our listeners might say, well, that's a joke. He's earning all that money. He should come back, and he hasn't put Wales first. Do you know what? It's his job, and I've got no idea what he earns at Toulon, but I think there's a good chance it's quite a lot more than that. He'll be earning that money for another handful of seasons, then he's gone, done. He's not going to walk into the media. He might not want to be a coach. Who knows what he's going to do? He's got a limited amount of time to earn. That is half the argument. The other half is that he's not being a diva. He's just saying, it's not like, stop messing me around. You do as I say or I'm gone. From what I understand, it's just, can you just communicate with me properly? Stop changing your mind and stop messing me about. And who wants to... Exactly. He's got WRU, who clearly want him, but not that much. And he's got Murad Boujalal at Toulon, who loves him. And he said some funny things when he first arrived there, but who loves him in an environment
They nearly terminated his contract at one stage because he was injured.
Injured, yeah. But yeah. Now he's in an environment where he feels loved and wanted. And I don't care who you are. That is important. There's emotion involved.
Wish someone loved me to 420 grand.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes look at these salaries and think, right, what wouldn't I do for that? And I haven't thought of anything I wouldn't do for 420 grand yet.
Nothing.
I'm not sure there is anything.
Anyway, Ian Madigan, signing for Bristol, that's big news. Good signing for Bristol, mate. A quality like that. I think it shows, you know, his international career. He's not obviously thinking that he's probably thinking, right, I'm not really going to get picked. They've got Paddy Jackson, they've got Jonathan Sexton, they're going to be there for a while. Mm. You know, I'm going to go earn some money, have some fun, you know, try different environments. I think it's really good. Great signing for them. There's no clause in his contract either, which means, you know, it looks like he is going to be playing.
No relegation clause.
Championship rugby, yeah.
Yeah.
But what a signing for him, what a player.
Really good. And, you know, I think that Bristol are likely...
It's a year too late, in my opinion.
It is, but they're likely to go down.
Yeah.
They're likely to come back up because the playoff system has been scrapped in the championship now. So top of the league straight up, and I think that's how it should be.
Do you think that's because eventually they're looking to ring fence it?
Yes, I think potentially. Okay. I think also it's just not fair. So I think you can, you know, win every game of the year and lose in the final. It's actually horrible.
Well, Bristol would have been up 2 years earlier, wouldn't they?
Yes, yeah. So they suffered a bit, but you know, it's taken too long to fix in my view.
Do you think it's wrong then to have a playoff in the Premiership for the final?
I don't like that either. I realise commercially it's great, but I don't like it.
Commercially it's great, it makes it very exciting. But
I say that because I played in a Bath team that finished top of the league and lost in the final.
That's the whole point of a league. You know,
that's what I think.
The league is the best team at the end of the league.
I think if you really want those semis and finals, you get a great cup competition going with massive incentives for the winners and the clubs so they don't just put kids out there.
Mm.
But it's tough when you've got Europe as well. It's not like football. You know, the boys are battered after league in Europe.
I agree with you. So,
all right, we're in agreement. So we're
good signing for Bristol.
Really good. Yeah, well done then. But I feel like they've come up this season and looked like a championship team. There's a couple of times they've looked like a premiership team when they've been absolutely desperate. But I think on the whole, and at Worcester at the weekend, they looked like a championship side, whereas Worcester looked like a premiership team.
We'll get on to that, mate.
All right. A little bit. All right, mate.
We've still got some news to go first, mate.
All right, boy.
So Saturday night, 10:30, Sky Sports box office.
Oh.
Hey, Bellew.
Bellew? Who's Bellew?
Craig Bellamy.
Can you shut your computer up? What's your problem?
I don't know. It's just...
Every time it beeps, you look at it and press something that doesn't work.
It's just getting loads of Tinder notifications. And that's a joke.
That's a grinder.
Match.
Hey, Bellew.
What a fight.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
When I say what a fight, I mean, I was just intrigued all the way through. Because part of me thought WWE, and part of me thought this is amazing. You know, I was torn in between reality and fiction.
All these people are saying it's. Do you know?
So you've got a theory on this because you ruptured your Achilles.
It's not a theory.
It is.
I know the truth.
It's proven. But a lot of people saying it was his knee. A lot of people saying his ankle.
Yeah.
Something went. You know that because as he's moving back, he looks down at his foot. He knows something's wrong.
Yeah. Well, look on my Twitter feed for the close-up video of something happening with his right lower leg, and it is absolutely undeniable. That's why. But I know it's undeniable now because I know the facts.
You've ruptured your Achilles.
I didn't rupture it. I wish I had.
You had a partial tear.
It was hanging on by a thread, which meant they didn't cut it and refix it. They just tried to fix around the thread.
And do you think with that injury you sustained, that you could have carried on boxing, for instance.
This is the thing. I did mine, Yes is the answer.
Okay.
I played about 35 minutes against Colomier in the front row. And I knew I'd done something. But rupturing your Achilles is sometimes excruciatingly painful and sometimes numb. And people just hear, they feel and hear a snap and they look down and something's not right, but kind of looks normal, and they carry on and realise, hang on a minute, I'm running like a drunk person, which is exactly what David Hay did, and they go down and think something's wrong. Physios come on, grab the back of your calf and say, there's nothing there, mate. There's just a big hole where there used to be a massive Achilles tendon. You're in Barney rubble. So I watched it, and I'm not an expert. Firstly, I know I'm talking too much again. Do you want me to tell you my theory or not?
Yeah, big time.
Well, it's not a theory. So,
big time. While I hold my breath.
As you know, what I hate about Twitter is when people come on and present opinion as fact. It's like, you don't know the truth. I didn't go on there as someone who's done their Achilles, someone who knows what to look for and all that sort of stuff, pretending I was a doctor. I said what I thought. One guy says to me, definitely faking it. And then I get texts from one ex-player who I won't name saying, you're not buying all this Achilles rubbish, are you? He's faking it. It's all bullshit. And I'm like, hang on a minute. It's not all bullshit. Yeah, breathe out, you dick. So they're coming on and presenting opinion as fact. So I said to one guy straight off the bat, I'll bet you 50 quid, an actual 50 quid. This guy's a physical therapist, a physio or something. I will bet you 50 quid here and now you are wrong. He said he's definitely faking it. I said, you're wrong, mate. You're presenting your opinion as fact. And it's the... Anyway, so he's not wrong. He ruptured his Achilles and he's had surgery because the guy who did his surgery did mine as well. And the physio, not the guy who was strapping his leg like an amateur. That was one of his corner men.
I love that strapping.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. That wasn't his physio.
Duct tape as well.
But the physio, I won't name him because he's a very private guy, but the physio who was in his corner on the night happened to be the physio who fixed my Achilles.
Right, we got there. We got there in the end.
And I now know that he has had surgery to fix it.
Okay.
Same physio, same surgeon that I used.
So Bellew also broke his hand as well.
But breaking your hand in a boxing match is not ideal, but loads of guys do it and win fights.
Because there's such little bones in your
hand. The key thing if you're looking for the... By the way, this is not in dispute anymore. David Hay did his Achilles and fought on. I am not a David Hay fan. I don't like the way he operates. I don't think there's any wit to his pre-match hype, to his banter. I find him hugely crude. Not very entertaining, didn't like the build-up at all. I think at least Muhammad Ali had a bit of wit about him. There's not a lot of that in David Hay. However, he is absolutely as hard as iron. He fought on with a done Achilles. Watch his right foot. That's the power foot that develops the power for his power shot on the right. He loses that, gone. Watch his right foot. As soon as someone hurts their Achilles and they know they got to stand on it, what you can't do is face your toes forward and push off like you are if you're walking or running. Everyone, say it's his right foot, which it was, goes out to 90 degrees from his body because he's got no propulsion because his tendon that creates propulsion at the back of his leg is gone. So his foot goes out to the side and he uses effectively his shin bone and his heel to give him propulsion. That's exactly how I walked for about a year. So absolutely hard as nails. But what I'll say this now, what really pisses me off is that Tony Bellew is, fair play, he did really well, but he's... No one's mentioning the injury. He beat a bloke on one leg. This is not the biggest upset in boxing history. He beat a heavyweight with a ruptured Achilles. Why isn't he mentioning it?
Mate, can I talk now?
Embarrassing.
That's about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it just pissed me off.
And moral of that story was that you know the physio.
I felt very confident. I knew what had happened, and then it was confirmed by the physio.
So Morgan Stoddard, ex rugby player for Scarlets, played a few times for Wales as well.
Good guy.
He's ruptured his Achilles. He claims there's no way that David Hay could carry on if that happened. Now, I'll be honest with you. Right, I said I was torn in between it being a bit of a theatre and it actually being a proper fight. I still am a little bit. I mean, after speaking to you and how convincing you are, I'm sort of edging towards it, hopefully, being a proper fight and a normal one. Well, not a normal one, just a... What's the word I'm looking for, mate?
Genuine.
A genuine
legitimate
fight. Legitimate fight. What I found strange was there's no real mention in the interviews after of the injury.
Ridiculous. And, embarrassing.
And surely if David Hay was... I mean, pre-match or pre-fight, they both hated each other more than anything. You know, it was glasses being thrown. It was them calling each other names, fronting each other out. Why would you not even go to that Why would you not say it after that you've injured yourself? That you've injured yourself.
I'll tell you why.
He said,
no, I'll tell you why.
I haven't finished yet, mate. You've gone on for ages now. He didn't mention it at all. He said, Tony Bellew won fair and square. If it was that much of an injury,
I've got the answer.
Surely you would say it.
I've got the answer.
Another thing was.
Do you want the answer to that or not?
No. Okay. Another thing was that for two heavyweights, there wasn't much markings on the face. You know, no cuts, no nothing. I can't believe that either. I'm torn, mate. I'm so torn. Right, go on. What's your answer, quick?
He didn't mention it because last time he fought with an injury against Klitschko. I think it was Klitschko. He mentioned it in the interview afterwards and got absolutely abused for it.
Okay,
people still talk about
it. That wasn't as visible as this, though, mate. So I think it's different. His toe wasn't visible. You know, he didn't have a visible injury. He didn't injure himself in the sixth round. You know, you couldn't tell.
He went so over the top saying, won it fair and square. It was like that was his mission to say that so he couldn't get abused for it.
But it was visibly seeable, his injury.
But you thought it might be theatre? So wasn't that visible to you, was it? Or to the 50% of viewers who said it was all bollocks?
Yeah, that's why I say I'm torn, mate.
Excuse the pun.
That's why I'm saying I'm torn between the both.
He definitely injured himself. He's definitely had surgery to fix his Achilles. He definitely fought on with a torn or ruptured Achilles. And you know as well as I do that that amount of adrenaline, we haven't experienced that much, but the amount you get in, say, a big rugby match disguises pain like nothing else. And he battled on and he didn't mention it because he knew that last time he mentioned his toe, he got absolutely hammered and still does. People still mention it on social media. Follow him on social media. People get into him about that toe comment all the time.
I don't think he'd have been hammered.
He is nails.
I don't think he'd have been hammered for saying he injured himself.
Yeah, but if you were him and you'd been hammered before, how about you don't mention it and basically come out of that? He comes out of that with massive credit.
But it was too obvious for him not to mention it, is my point. It's way too obvious.
I thought it was too obvious for the interviewer not to mention it. It's ridiculous. Worst interview ever. He categorically injured himself, and he's had surgery, so...
Yeah, well, I can't believe he didn't mention it himself. I can't believe David Haye didn't mention it in the interview after.
I don't know why he can't believe it. He didn't mention it because of the toe.
Yeah, but... Yeah,
anyway,
circles here.
Hard as nails. Not his biggest fan, but hard as nails. Tony Bellew needs to admit that he beat a bloke on one leg and keep it a bit real, if you ask me.
Tony Bellew also looked tiny compared to Anthony Joshua.
Oh, my
Did
days.
Did you see that?
Oh, my days. Yeah. AJ hits him at Sleepsville, isn't
but
it?
But also, another thing, Flats, is that they were hyping up the second fight too much straight after. They were talking about it way too much.
Yeah, a bit of a love-in, wasn't it? It was a bit horrible.
No, but it was like, you know, I don't know. It's like someone had told him, you've got to hype up the second fight, you've got to hype up the second fight. It looked a bit too staged for me, mate.
Tony Bellew makes no attempt to disguise the fact that he is there to get paid as much as possible. David Haye might try and disguise it, but I think everyone knows he's come back because he wants to get paid millions and millions of pounds again.
Mm.
Okay, so they both know the game. David Haye is one of the best hype men in the game. Tony Bellew is becoming a hype man, but he's quite open about it. He says, I just want the money. And they are both straight away in money mode. They know if they get a rematch, that's millions of pounds each for half an hour's work. A lot of work in camp, but your half an hour fight. So they are straight into money mode. These are two money men.
Do you see my point, though? It seems a little bit off about them not mentioning the interview, them going straight into the...
That's the interviewer. The interviewer's got to pin him on it.
Yeah, but you'd still say it. You know,
he wouldn't. Tony Bellew doesn't want to undermine his victory. Yeah. David Haye doesn't want to look like a whinger.
Yeah, well, I think people would understand if he was mentioned his injury.
But he had a broken toe last time or whatever it was. That people might have understood that. It's quite hard to box with a bad foot, but because you need to push off. They didn't understand it. They tore into him.
But you don't see it being broken. That's the point.
But then loads of people don't think he did his Achilles. So what if he says that and everyone says it's all bollocks?
But you actually see him... What you see is him injuring himself and invisible. When he broke his toe, you don't see him limping or anything like that. But anyway, gets people talking.
Yeah, it does. Nails, absolutely nails. That guy.
I'd still watch the second fight.
Not too admirable or likable, I would suggest. But
not the heaviest
nails.
Either, mate, for a heavyweight. I used to think heavyweights used to be like 18, 19 stone.
Yeah, they're not that big, are they?
You know, I weigh more than David Haye. Yeah, I'm a pound more than David Haye in weight. So, I mean, I'm harder, stronger, tougher.
Mate, you'd kick his teeth in.
You'd go well, mate, as well.
I wouldn't. My arms are only 6 inches long. I'm like a T-Rex.
You like Mike Tyson?
Anthony Joshua's bigger, though. He's like 18 stone, isn't he?
Huge bloke.
17 and a half, 18 stone.
Huge bloke.
Good, Nick.
Yeah. Good as well on the chat.
Yeah. He just looks, he's set, the way he stands and everything, he's the absolute boss, isn't he?
Yeah.
Did you see Katie Taylor, the Irish lady? Did you see her box beforehand?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I love watching her.
So good.
I love watching her.
So, see how fast her combos are?
Oh, my days.
She hits hard.
She is small. She's like a 10 stone, 9.5, 10 stone woman or whatever she is.
Yeah, she's nine stone.
She would beat the shit out of you and me.
In boxing, yeah. But
if you got hold of her.
Not in a street fight. I'd be like Tommy the Machine Gun. No, actually, I'd be like Rocky versus Tommy the Machine Gun.
Yo, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the street's my ring. Is it something like that?
Yeah. It was really good, though, Rachel Taylor. Really impressed.
Katie Taylor. That's and Rachel. One. Rachel's good, too.
Yeah.
But I love watching her. And is this really inappropriate? I kind of fancy her a little bit as well. But
fancy everyone.
Yeah, not you.
So, David, this is our new little segment. It's called Leo Vegas Bet of the Week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
It better be good.
It better be. It will be good. It will be very good.
Okay, so I officially don't know how to do bets. So...
Okay, so we've chosen our game, right? So, England v Scotland. This weekend, the Calcutta Cup. Scotland hit a bit of form. You know,
They're sharp. They're super sharp.
They're doing all right. They're creating chances. They're scoring them.
I think you
Their
should
tails
bet.
Are up.
You're right. They're the informed team, and I think you should bet on them to beat England with your £25.
No, we're doing it together, mate.
Oh, together? Oh, God, they're never going to win. England by 10.
You reckon England by 10? Because the handicap odds are England minus 10.5.
Well, I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
So that means England have to beat Scotland by over 11 points.
By 11 points or over?
Yeah.
For us to win?
Yes.
And if we put 25 quid on that, what do we win?
25 back.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Double our money.
Yeah. Well, we don't win it. We donate it to charity.
Yeah, Children in Need, but we still win it and feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, we do.
And help those damn kids. I reckon I say we go for England to win by 11 then. Okay. 11 or... Then what if they win by 12? What happens
then?
Oh, is it?
Yeah, anything above that, it's fine.
Well, let's do it then.
What do they have to do, mate, to win now? Up front, tight five.
Oh, right, I see what you mean.
Take Scotland on.
I think the back lines, I think, are both blimmin' fab. I love the back rows. What day is it? It's Monday here. It's Monday afternoon, so we don't know the teams yet. But I hope, for Scotland's sake, Hamish Watson gets a game. I just love watching him play. I think he's brilliant, the Edinburgh flanker, and could cause England real problems. I think he would be the best fetcher on the field, best breakdown operative at the field, BDO.
So we'll have to take him out of the game.
Yeah, take him out and run at him as often as possible so he's making tackles.
Rather than juggling.
Rather than getting over the ball, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like when you play against, you know, Armitage or someone like that, you try and make him get his tackle count high so he can't jackal. So
so he's not the second man arriving.
Yeah, yeah, exactly it. So I think the type five is the way forward. Xander Fagerson is the Glasgow tight head I really, really rate. I think he's really good. He has struggled a couple of times. In a couple of games so far in the Six Nations. More than I thought he might, but I think that's partly down to the fact that he's young and learning. He's also facing great players. And they don't have... He's got it all on his shoulders, so to speak. You know, they lose WP Nell, Willem Petrus Nell, who's fab, and also Dickinson on the loose head. So I think he hasn't had the best loose heads with him, which would really help. But I think England have a right pop at their type five and try and get them on the back foot, because no back line is as good on its heels as it is on its toes, Tommy.
No, they're not. So we're going England minus 10.5 points on Leo Vegas. Get on there.
Let's have it.
LeoVegas.com. So before we look at the Pro 12 and the Aviva Prem, big boy, we've just had a chat about England beating Scotland.
Yeah.
This weekend. Wales, Ireland.
Ireland for me.
Yeah, I knew you would.
What do you think?
I mean, you called it right last week against Scotland.
Yeah.
It's a real close one, mate. The bookies are probably going to favour Ireland.
Do you reckon, even in Cardiff?
Yeah, Ireland are playing better as well.
Mm.
There's not many weaknesses in that Irish team, isn't it? I don't think.
Especially with Sexton back.
They're good in defence. They're good in attack. They're good in the air. They create opportunities. They've got a team that fairly comfortable with each other, so they know how to play. They're not looking for like an identity of how to break teams down or a style of play. They've got it.
Yeah.
They're there. It doesn't really matter if Sexton's in or Paddy Jackson.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, they're probably better in attack with Paddy Jackson because he's a bit more elusive, but Sexton gives him a bit more control and his kicking is spot on. Wales, on the other hand, are in a lot of pressure now.
Mm.
You know, especially losing to Scotland. Haven't lost in Scotland in 10 years. The worrying thing for Wales is their ability to attack.
Yeah.
And it's quite clear, and I'm not just slagging them off now. You know, you look at the England game, you look at the Italy game where they didn't get a bonus point, and that's the first game of the championship, but still you've got to be looking to get a bonus point, and other teams have done it quite easily against them. It's just, you know, not often do you get many tries scored off first phase because defences are so tight, set pieces so strong, but second or third phase you've got to be looking to cut teams and they don't. You know, there's not, for me, there's still not enough decoy runners, there's still not enough movement. It's still a little bit too...
What does that mean, though? There's not enough decoy runners, so it makes it too easy to defend, or what?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, as a defender, when you see people moving out your channel, you don't quite know who to take. You know, as a back or a 12 or a 13, you've got an area of the field and a channel to defend. You know, if someone's running straight at you, that's happy days.
Yeah.
You're taking them. But as soon as you see movement at the corner of your eye, you see a centre running across, you see a winger or another centre or 15 coming under, you're not quite sure who to tackle. You're in two minds. And that's when you're in two minds, that's what creates bad decisions. That's what creates space. And Wales don't do enough of that. And I know they're trying to. You know, they've brought Alex King in.
Yeah.
They're trying to look at a new style of play. Mm. But what happens when you're tired and you're exhausted, you revert back to the norm.
Mm.
And the norm has always been... Go the same way, take teams on physically.
Big units bashing it up.
They can't quite take teams on physically anymore because the big units aren't playing. When I talk about big units, I mean Jamie Roberts.
Yeah.
You know, he's not starting. They're moving away from that. They're playing with Scott Williams at 12, and that hasn't quite clicked yet either.
Mm.
You know, Scott Williams is in at 12 because, A, he can ball carry, he can tackle, but he's a little bit more elusive. He's got a passing game.
Mm.
But we're not seeing the best of that. We've got some great strike runners in that back line, but we're not seeing them utilise the best way they can.
Mm.
I still think Liam Williams should play, 15.
Yeah.
I know Lee Halfpenny's positioning, a lot of people think is better, and the ground he covers and where he aligns himself.
I think you're probably right, actually.
But rugby for me is still about attacking.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'd much rather watch a... You know, you have to attack better than you defend, otherwise you're not going to score any points whatsoever. Mm. And Liam Williams is one of the best attackers Wales have got, yet we're not seeing him enough in the game. Sam Davis is an unbelievable talent. There's no doubt about that. A try he scored, or set up for Josh Madueke.
Oh, how good was that?
Was absolutely delicious.
It's on the Scrum 5 Twitter feed if you want to look.
I still don't think he'll start, and I don't believe he should start just yet. I think he should get more game time, and he should have been brought on a lot earlier against Scotland. But Dan Bigger hasn't done enough wrong to lose his place.
Yeah.
And often the case is you have to wait for your time. So you have to wait for injuries. You have to buy your time, do the hard yards on the bench. When you get it, you take it. And I'm sure you will at the time. But they need to be more creative. They need to find a style of play that works.
Yeah.
The big issues are going to be back row. I think that's a huge one. Toby Faletau's fit.
Mm.
Who'd you drop there?
He was really good for Bath. Were rubbish at the weekend against Wasp. Faletau was really good.
But Warburton has been brilliant, hasn't he? He's been immense.
Yeah, can't drop him.
Same with Ross Moriarty. I know he's a little bit quieter against Scotland, but he's a real danger man.
Faletau stays on the bench, no question. That's what I do.
Tipperick. A lot of people saying, you know, drop Tipperick, easy option. But if Wales want to play this different style of play, he has to play, mate.
Yeah.
Because he's so skillful. Otherwise, you know, you've not got that link. We say it so many times, you've not got that link between fours and backs where you can run plays off Tipperick. So this is why they need to find a style that works, because if they want to play a little bit more expansive and wider, Tipperick needs to be in those wide channels because you can call moves off the cuff.
Mm.
He can react. He can be a ball player. He can be a strike runner. Doesn't matter. So,
Fascinating, but I...
Very fascinating, mate.
But it's
at home in the Principality Stadium.
Yeah.
They've had some good success there before.
Do you know the Welsh pulled out this performance? It was this mega intense performance against England and lost. And I suggested they might have shot their bolt, and by the time we got to Scotland, it turned out by the second half that was what had happened.
That was true, yeah. Didn't score a point in the second half.
Score a point in the second half, which is weird, but which is not great. But is the Wales-Ireland rivalry anywhere near intense enough to suggest that it's perhaps likely that they'll produce another England-type performance this weekend?
The rivalry's the same as England?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's up there. I think they all are there, but it's just the Six Nations, really. The rivalry's there between England, Ireland, France. You know, Scotland, they've always had a good record against Wales, until now.
Mm.
Italy, you know, you normally beat Italy. Although
yeah.
They've lost twice.
Yeah, but I just think, are they likely to get up to the levels of excitement that they did against England?
I think so, and the reason you get up to those levels is because of the history of the games and what's gone on. Also the pressure that you're under.
Yeah.
Huge amount of pressure in Wales. They're right under scrutiny. You know, talking coaches, players, the lot.
Yeah.
Haven't quite clicked. Didn't quite click in the autumn internationals.
Mm.
Not quite clicking now. And it's difficult. Like a lot of players, ex-players and pundits and fans are asking Rob Howley to experiment with the team. But you got to remember, Rob Howley's only got this team for a year. You know, he's not a new coach that's come in, said, right, blank canvas, we're going to play with, I don't know, two ball players, two tens, 10 and 12. He hasn't. He's got his team until Warren Gatland gets back.
Mm.
It's not his team to really develop and start again, is it? Because he's only got him for a short
term. It's almost like a maintenance role.
It is, exactly that. So he's under a lot of pressure, but what's he meant to do? You know, he's a coach as well. He's got to win as many games as possible. You know, he's still, when his time comes up with Wales, he's still got to find a job after that.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult situation, I think, for Rob to be in.
And I'm inclined to think that actually, bar one or two changes, that everyone would make one or two changes to every team. So I might change the fullback.
Yeah. You put your own stamp on it, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Start again.
I might have a tinker with a back three, but otherwise, I look at it and think from the Pro 12 games I watch and the internationals I watch that he is picking largely the right team. But I think the Scott Williams selection, if he had to play for me, but hasn't quite worked yet, and I wonder if it's going to work outside bigger. I tweeted this week that after that tweet of the Sam Davis try for Ospreys came up, I said all they've got to do is pick him now, something like that. But I must say, and I kind of, it's not that I don't stand by that, I do think they've got to put him on the bench and get him on. This guy needs to be playing 20, 30, 35 minutes in test matches soon.
Yes.
If he's going to get anywhere. But I do think that in order to pick, it's easy to say pick someone, they've got to pick Faletau. Like you said, who do they drop? I don't think you can drop Dan Biggar yet. I think he's got too much credit in the bank.
The good thing about Sam Davis is that you can bring him on at 15 as well.
Right.
Because what you want him in the game.
Yeah.
So at 15, you know, he can still come in as first receiver, which is his strength. He takes it so flat.
Yeah.
You know, loves making breaks. Is a genuine threat, ball in hand, which means defenders can't move off him.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he'll go through the gap. He had an amazing offload, as we said.
That was so nice.
Against Edinburgh.
Delicious, you called it. And I think that's a nice adjective.
And apart from the Ospreys, the other three Welsh regions were pretty abysmal.
Mm.
At the weekend. But let's get on to some, I mean, the Blues lost to Munster here at the Arms Park. They were leading at half time, massive wind. You don't often see that in professional rugby anymore, with the wind being such a threat. You do in some grounds, you know,
yeah,
up in Newcastle, places like that. Scarlets were so average against Leinster, but Leinster were and are
super
brilliant.
It's a Stuart Lancaster effect, they all love him.
Yeah, in Glasgow, hammered the Dragons. But what was your game for the
Worcester-Bristol? Bristol were really good last week against Bath. Worcester were terrible against Saints. Both sides reversed that form this weekend. Bristol, this is a punchy thing to say, and it's kind of almost without substance, but Bristol lost that game in the first 90 seconds. First kickoff, they got battered off the ball. Penalty, line out in the corner, and they were run over their own line by the Worcester. It ended up being a penalty try, 7-0 in a minute or two.
Not good, is it?
And straight away, it's a penalty to Worcester. And Worcester looked absolutely pumped, slick, powerful. They kicked the leather off it last week, and it was so dull at Northampton. They properly could have beaten Northampton, but they went to this game plan that didn't work and didn't utilise the strengths they had at all. Basically made really good ball runners, kick the ball for an hour and a half, which was dull. This week they properly went for it and they were outstanding. Big Will Spencer in the second row for Worcester, a guy I played with. He was academy when I was at Bath. One of the strongest guys I've ever been on a rugby field with, even when he was 19. I mean, being 19 and saying to Danny Grucock, who the f*** is that?
Yeah.
It's the strongest thing I've ever seen on a field. And he's now fully, he's been injured for ages. He's fit, really dominant physically. They were fab. And Francois Houhard was absolutely brilliant.
Do you know what I noticed a massive difference in, I don't know if it was just because they upped it for Bristol and it's a bit of a relegation battle, but how physical they were,
yeah,
both in attack and defence.
Yeah.
There was absolutely no room for Bristol. The second half, Tom Vandell must have been tackled into touch three or four times. There was just there was no space whatsoever out there. I was really impressed with Heem as well.
Oh, yeah. He's so good.
He is.
Bryce Heem is
like
so good.
He's like a real lazy runner. He looks like, he doesn't look like he's travelling.
Yeah.
But he's fast as well.
And he hits hard too.
He does hit hard.
Really, really good.
Game for me of the weekend was Gloucester Quins, though.
Oh my days, what a game.
Like, I'm sure Charlie Sharple's first try, it'd be up there.
Try the season. Yeah.
Turnover, 100 metres, down the other end, try. Halifanua run, lovely offload.
I really like Halifanua, I think he's really good.
Hines could have given it on a switch to Sharple, straight away he doesn't, but managed to recycle it and Sharple's pops over. But you think, you know, Gloucester are going to crack on from here. But they don't. Quins come back.
Well, Hibbard got a lazy yellow card and they conceded 15 points in that time.
Yeah, I've got a Hibbard written down on a bit of paper here. I've got next to it Wales.
Yeah. Agree. If you're saying he should play,
yeah,
I agree. I really like Ken Owens, the Sheriff, by the way. I think he's a really, really good rugby player. And I think he rarely plays badly. And I think he's been playing... His game against England was the best I've ever seen him play. Did really well. Richard Hibbard would be my first choice Wales hooker without question. And he's one of those players. I had a bit of a theory about Gloucester that the last owner that had them signed a handful of massive names on, inverted commas, too much money.
Yeah.
And just to make the team look big, full of rock stars, and then sold it to someone who didn't quite realise what they were buying. Hang on a minute, they got loads of big names, bought it. I wonder if that's how it went, because they all got signed. Why would you sign loads of big names from different countries just as you're about to sell a club? But he has been their best big signing in years.
He even offloaded, like, out the back door for one of the tries. The Chisholm brothers scored good tries.
Hard to shake off, aren't they?
Oh, that's good. That is good.
When Chisholm hits the line, it's... he takes some clearing out. Chisholm brothers, both really good. Mm. Quick one, real quick, big one. He is actually a hell of a player. And I think... This is punchy, Tommy. I think he might well move ahead of Jack Clifford in the Quins pecking order pretty soon, because he is being really dominant at the moment.
But they'll try some turnovers as well, which is nice.
Did you see Laurie Fisher, the head coach of Gloucester? Did you see his tweet?
No.
After the game, it's something along the lines of unacceptable, capitulation, clearly not good enough, time to make room for someone else, I think. So I think he basically quit on Twitter after the game.
Really?
Yeah. Not the way to do it, but good value for us lot watching from the outside.
Quins won with a penalty off a scrum at the end. Did you see that scrum?
Yeah.
Was it the correct decision?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, they absolutely butchered them.
That's cleared that up. Exeter beat Leicester by doing a Leicester.
They were outstanding. Exeter were all over them. And what Leicester want to do, what they need to do at least, is grind teams up front at home. And they couldn't do that. Exeter set piece was dominant, line out and scrum. Jeff Parling prominent.
Exeter played like Leicester used to play, didn't they? Just kept it tight, physical. Some nice touches by Sladey.
He's
slick. He's very slick.
He's a delicious rugby player, Tom.
He is. And did you know, mate, that's the heaviest league defeat Leicester have had in this season.
This season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's at home.
34-15 to Exeter.
Bonus point win away from home at Welford Road. Leicester aren't in brilliant form, but they have been in good form, but only against teams lower than them generally.
Yeah.
Against the top teams, this was a big test for them, and Exeter have properly put them away.
I have to mention Bath Wasps. Sorry about this, boy.
You mention it. Away.
I know you're impartial, but you know Bath still has a bit of a...
It's still home.
Bit of a hold on you.
It's still home.
The moment of the game for me, forget tries, was Wade's tackle on Denton.
I got a thing. Did you watch my highlights show on the telly?
Yeah.
Did you listen to my bits or just watch the games?
I just listened to Mark Dudden.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So I've got a thing about that.
I didn't have time.
You watch really good tackle from Christian Wade. Yep. Dave Denton, you know, should have scored that. But look how, if you look at it from the side camera, look how far Dave Denton is over the try line.
Before he, yeah.
Kenny Logan once said to me, why run, unless you're trying to get around on the post, you've got loads of room, why run so far over the line? Dive for the line and you score.
Who, Lenny Cogan?
Lenny Cogan.
Yeah.
Yeah, looks like, yeah, Charlie Hodgson. And it was, he's miles over the line. You look at Kirtley Beale when he scored that beautiful try from the offload from Tommy Taylor, round homer, dives early and skids over.
I picked Tommy Taylor at the start of the season as one to look out for.
So good.
Mostly because you told me. But it was
really good.
That line from Beale, he runs off Tommy Taylor. It's just instinctive. It's just some players have an idea of what's going to happen and be able to preempt where the space is going to be.
Yeah.
Beale just does that.
Do you know what I say to you? I say to this to you, Tommy. Mm. Let's say Lee Halfpenny's on 450 grand a year. I've got no idea what he earns at Sutton. Let's say he's on 400 grand a year.
Okay.
Let's say Kirtley Beale's on 700 grand a year. These numbers sound crazy. I would go so far as to say Kirtley Beale is worth every one of those pennies and pounds.
Willie LaRue was good as well, mate.
Yeah. Every time Kirtley Beale plays, he is excellent. Absolutely excellent at everything.
12, winger.
15.
15.
He's brilliant. And Willie LaRue, really good as well, yeah. He likes to be called Villy, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, and how do you pronounce it? Rokodunguni.
Rokodunguni.
Yeah.
Been getting that wrong for a few years.
Saracens beat Newcastle as well, but fairly close game.
Billy's back. Billy Vunipola's back. Yeah. Grand Slam's on.
Yeah. And then we've got Northampton beating Sale. Had a bit of a slow start, Northampton, haven't they? But they seem to be finding a way.
They're still in it.
Yeah.
Sale are struggling, mate, down in 10th. They're struggling. I think it's about staying clear of Worcester now for them and getting it done, getting through it for me. Got any questions, Tom?
I've got a few, mate.
What you got?
Right. All right, boys. This is from JP Swain on Twitter. Thoughts on Cockerill to Edinburgh? Good move?
Yes.
Okay, good. And Hamish Watson for the Lions?
Yes. He's good enough. He probably won't go, but he's good enough.
Yeah, he is. He's good enough, but these next two games are massive for him. If he has the same impact and the same games he did against Wales, against Scotland, and the last game, then there's potential. But
yes.
Luckily, in the Northern Hemisphere, we're blessed with quite a few good sevens, aren't we?
Nous sommes blessés.
He's also said something quite crude at the end.
Yeah, these guys do that.
Yeah, love the pod. Get Shank's mum on.
Oh, God. Why has he gone there?
Grow up,
mate. Tom Hogan on email has asked us, well, actually, what he said is, hi, I look like Chris Ashton on donuts. Do you have any life advice for me? Mine is vitamin D, get your teeth sorted because you sound hanging. I don't know. Do you go out in public if you look like that? Not sure. Hang on, we've got visitors. Get out. Get him out, Shanks. Get him out.
Matt Jones, though, is the groundsman here.
It looks dodgy to me.
We're just looking for an autograph or
I don't want to be. I don't want to be too offensive.
He's not fully grown, no.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Eat the greens, mate. You can't be eating donuts.
Yeah, I think it's more about vitamin D and teeth, but greens. Yeah. This Tom lad's struggling. Right, on you, Tommy.
Get on the spin bike. Did spin this morning in the gym. Yeah.
You and the housewives, is it?
No, me, Bubs, my mate Bubs, and Weird Andrew.
Yeah.
They all did it.
That's nice.
I mean, I think they just did it on one gear. I don't think they turned the gears up. They did dummy turns. You know, when you just put your hand down there to pretend to turn the gears up.
Civvies, mate.
And just touch it.
Yeah, civvies. They don't dig in like we do, mate.
But I could be lying. I don't know.
Yeah, flattering yourself.
Yeah, I got one on Twitter here from Johnny Cahill. Carhill. What's the weirdest pre-game ritual superstition that you've come across? Like, such as Lee Byrne reading his book.
Pretending. I remember Paul Wallace used to be sick before games a lot. You'd hear, you know, but he never seemed nervous. I'm not convinced it was a nerves thing. I think it was part of his body just naturally was sick before he played.
I'm pretty sure we've had a couple of questions like this before. Did you do anything? I used to cut my toenails and fingernails.
This is weird. So did I.
You've got to cut them once a week, haven't you? So why not?
Yeah, I used to do that. I used to floss. Before a game. I used to do dental floss a lot.
Floss your nails or your teeth?
My teeth.
Okay.
I used to floss often at full time, often at half time, often pre-match.
Here, I'll just add to this. Did you ever have a, like, when you stayed at home especially, do you ever have like a pre-match meal you used to eat?
No, I could barely eat, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
I used to. Which I learned from Marden Williams, who learned from Scott Quinnell.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sorry to name drop. But
what was that? Bag of chips?
Pancakes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So okay. I used to have a breakfast in the morning of, I don't know, eggs, beans, a bit of toast, and then, you know, four hours, say, before kick-off, used to have pancakes.
Okay.
Yeah, with some banana, some honey or syrup.
Nutella.
Bit of sugar.
Yeah.
And a bit of carbs.
Yeah, sugar, always. It turns out, is probably a bad thing for you to have a few hours before a match, because you're probably up, then you're probably down again by the time you get there. But
I'm up and down anyway, mate.
Wouldn't know that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's just
as
me.
As a bloke.
Yeah.
Guy Hollis has emailed this question. When and how did you two top-class operators... I put that bit in. When and how did you two first meet, and what were your first impressions of each other? Was it love at first sight?
Can't remember.
Sarries, 98?
98.
I remember thinking you were quite... It was a funny combination of being socially very confident, but actually really awkward nonetheless, but you never felt awkward. I think everyone else just did.
Yeah.
Except when a camera was put in front of you, when you used to do this weird gurning thing because you couldn't smile properly. Even in your like sister's wedding photos at her house and your mum's house and stuff, you got this really... You only learnt to smile comfortably since you retired.
Yeah, close the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so uncomfortable. And I remember you got stitched up and had to do a speech. You made you stand up in front, talk in front of the lads, and you really hated it. And in a rugby club, you don't get sympathy for that. But now you're actually a public speaker for a living, so it's the irony is not the irony, but the progression is commendable.
Yeah, it's a bit like Michael Phelps, you know, didn't used to like swimming. Now look at him.
Yeah, the greatest world's ever seen. Just
but
like
we,
that.
We used to live together around the same area. We're all about the same age, weren't we? As myself, Adam Jones, Ben Johnston, then we had Matt Kearns, Tony Rocks, John Dawson, yourself. So we're all about the same age. We all used to like going out and. Having a few drinks out and about.
Yeah, we had a nice time, didn't we?
Yeah.
Here's one from Alex Barker on email. If there was a Six Nations team heading to New Zealand, which French and Italian players do you think would be in the reckoning? So if you could add France and Italy to the Lions, effectively. This guy said, I'm thinking Gerardo, French hooker, Wesley Fofana, Parise, Campagnaro and Vakatawa, not many after that.
I don't know if I'd go Vakatawa.
I think you're right, neither would I.
I don't think his work rate's as good as it could be. He probably doesn't understand too much English as well, so we can just properly rip into him. He's quite slow on turning.
Yeah.
And doesn't get into the game enough. He's a deadly finisher, that's for sure.
But that's all he's got. Is that what you're telling me?
His all-round game isn't as good as other wingers. Okay.
I think Johan Uge's better than him.
Yeah, so do I. He's bit dirty for me there.
He is, yeah, but we're taking best players.
Parise, 1,000%.
1,000%?
Mm.
Campagnaro, I'd actually go Lavotti, the Italian.
I don't know if
I'd go
Campagnaro. Really good. I don't know if I'd go Campagnaro. He's good, but...
He's so good, mate.
I don't know if he's Lions good.
Mm.
Okay?
What do you think of Lavotti, the loose head Italian?
Strong.
Yeah.
You know,
you like his
stack, angles yeah? in a little bit too much. On the hook, I need to scrummage a little bit straight. He needs to get his feet below his hips a little bit more. He's left wanting.
But I think Vahamahina has been excellent. I think Gurdon's been excellent. Pikamol's got to be in there.
Pikamol's will have to be in there.
I'd have Pikamol ahead of Parise, since you're asking.
Yeah.
He's a better player.
But you know, if they're including the Lions, you have to take someone from Italy, and it's only him really to take. Otherwise,
yeah.
You don't feel part
and,
of it.
And you can't not go. You
Do
can't
you think
go
there'll
that
ever be a Lions tour where one nation has zero representatives?
No, because I think everyone is too scared of the backlash.
So there we go. Parise has to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that'll do. Yeah. Got any more questions, Tom? We can't. We got loads, actually. We can't answer all of them. We can only answer a fraction. But
okay, one for you here. Richard Porter on Twitter. Out of your generation, all current players, who could go on to be a decent referee?
Nick Wood, the Gloucester prop, is refereeing. Just started refereeing the game I played in on Saturday, on Friday afternoon. He's really good.
Yeah.
Richard Horton, apparently, is really good. The old Sarries winger.
He is a ref.
He might end up being a sevens ref, I think.
He refs a lot of the sevens. I've seen him around.
I think I'm not. It's like saying you think a captain has to be this position or that position, but it's not a specific. Quite so. I'm not so quite so ardent about it as a rule, but I think that you know, it, if you're going to, you know, a prop will be good at refereeing scrums, potentially breakdowns. Yes. But crossing is something he might never have seen in a game up close, you know, or very rarely. So it probably helps to have someone who's got an overall view of the game. So someone like a 10 or a 9. So Carl Dixon.
There's not many big refs because you have to be able to keep up with play.
Run, so much running. Yeah, so much running. And Nick Wood, mind you, has lost two, I mean, he says two, could be three stone since he retired. And he looks amazing, like really? Painfully good, really like... bit like ripped and stuff.
Got another one.
I hate that.
On Twitter here. Yeah, it's disgusting.
I hate that. But scrum halves, basically, I think, they run well and they're part of the tactical play. They're part of the kicking game. They've got a great view of the breakdown. So I, apart from the scrum side of things, which all refs need to work on, and even those of us that have been in the scrum for years get wrong half the time anyway, or some of the time, I think scrum halves probably best position. So Carl Dixon might end up being a great ref.
Mitch Palooza, 2014 on Twitter, says, "Dear Flats and Shanks, do players keep themselves in good nick in the off-season or do most just let themselves go?" I would say 10, 15 years ago, most would just let themselves go.
Yeah.
You know, you get 6 weeks off. It was normally 4 weeks of doing nothing and then the next 2 weeks you spend a little bit of time getting back in shape. So
yeah.
Your muscles harden up a little bit for pre-season or the testing. But now I would say it's more of a mental break. I think players still keep themselves in shape. But yeah. You know, they don't have a game at the weekend, so they can switch off. But they'll do a little bit. You cannot afford to let yourself get out of shape because it goes three times quicker than you put it on.
Yeah, and I had breakfast on Sunday morning with Tom Biggs.
Yeah.
Who's a friend of mine I played at Bath with, and now he's at Worcester. Had a horrible injury actually for a while, but he was talking. I mean, he's in unbelievable nick. I mean. There might not even be a rugby player in the nick he's in.
Yeah, okay.
He's like that Pierce Spies, whatever his name is, but a smaller version.
It was Pierce Spies.
Yeah, Biggsy's crazy.
Is he vain or is it?
The train's mega hard.
Okay.
And he's going to be a personal trainer when he retires, but he'll be a really good one. He's one of those really focused dudes. And he was talking about.
Is he going to be training to the stars like Mel Dean?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, only with a much much darker sense of humour. Very dark individual, really? But in a good way. Yeah, really good. Doesn't muck
about.
Do you
end up having a lot of conversations about what you would do for £1 million?
Yeah, he's like that, but he's more like he's never told a lie. So if he listens, I listen to your podcast, I quite like it. And coming from him, not that he doesn't give praise out, but it's like if he thought it was rubbish, he would say, "I hate your podcast."
I've loved watching his haircuts differ through the years
as well. Yeah, he looks great at the moment. Big, long ginger beard and crazy hair. Massive. He's on crutches because of his ankle op.
Okay.
And his triceps on his crutches are freaky. People walk past, they're like, oh my days, what are they?
That is one of the pluses of having a bad knee or ankle when you've got to use crutches.
Yeah, but like he picks up his cup of coffee and he's like veins pop out of his biceps just picking up a coffee. I mean, unbelievable.
Girls for the girls. But on for the guys.
That, exactly. Yeah, there you go. But on that subject, he wouldn't let himself go, but he was talking about he's got a membership at the gym next to Six Ways as well. That they pay for. It's not free. But I said, "Why have you got that?" He's like, "Just to do my extras so I can use a different gym." When he was at Bath, he trained in the Bath gym and he had a membership in town. So he's in the gym all the time, days off in the gym.
Has he got kids?
No.
That's why.
That'll change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Got any more? Do you want to do any more?
No.
All right. We should call it a Doris Day.
Well, yeah. If you want to get in contact with us, get on Twitter.
Yeah.
Go on, boy. What is it?
@ Flats and Shanks.
Yeah, that's right. You can email us.
contact@flatsandshanks.com.
Or go through Facebook.
Flats and Shanks.
And if you want to put a bet on, get yourself on leovegas.com.
Yeah, they know their onions. Good luck, everyone. Ta-da.
Bye.